Okay, we shall pick up. We are on section 2, page 9, 6678-1. I sent out the discussion topics for the 7th dwelling place. You got those. And this morning I noticed I misspelled Teresa's name in the very first one.
Oh, no.
So I'll go through and do a scrub on it. If I find any more errors, I'll send it out again. But
I thought you originate where you don't care, really, because I do have the calm one side of the head. Yeah. But, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And after we finish section 7, I'd like to just have a general discussion about what were the things that impressed you the most going through this book, the things that kind of surprised you, mm-hmm. or things that made you really think. Because mm-hmm. She's got some stuff in 7, too, that kind of struck me as mm-hmm. for the first time, you know. So mm-hmm. After we've all finished, we'll kind of see, to kind of get a sense of how it helped us, you know. And then after we finish this, we're going to go through some of the Psalms.
Good. And, which one do you have there?
I got the Navarre Bible. It's got all the commentary and stuff like this.
So I
like to use them because they do a really good job with the Old Testament. And in the process of getting ready for that, I also found a bunch of references on the Psalms that I put on my Kindle. Thomas Aquinas's study of the Psalms. Excuse me. Couple of other saints and stuff, they have this stuff on the Psalms mm-hmm. and all. And Peter Kreef. He's really mm-hmm. good. He's got one on the Psalms. So I just went through my Kindle, mm-hmm. Did a search on the Psalms and found a few things that looked interesting. So mm-hmm. we can use them as a reference, see what they say about different ones, you know.
Because they use them for so many different ideas.
And the Psalms are kind of they have like groups of mm-hmm. Psalms for different things. So I'm going to go to Catholic Answers and see okay. what all the different groups are.
Okay.
So we can look at them as in terms of groups rather than just start with the first one and start working through, you
good.
Know.
Yeah.
Because I think it would help us to, because they have different groupings that are for different reasons and purposes and all.
Yeah.
So
you going to put that reminder in the bulletin?
Yes.
Because maybe some people would be more interested
in
Psalms because Catholics don't know a lot
about it. There is a little book out, too. It's not even, it's about 4 inches by 6 inches, The School of Prayer. I think you can get it on Amazon. And it takes all the Psalms and does word by word. I mean, line by line,
really?
Which is very helpful.
Is it Catholic?
Yeah. I should have brought it.
School of Prayer?
The School of Prayer. It's Amazon, yeah.
I have to look at that.
Yeah, School of Prayer.
I don't know if that's one of the ones I got or not. I left my Kindle in the car.
Yeah, it was helpful.
Yeah.
Exercise classes. That's all I do.
But there are a few things like that that are good. I'm going to wait to put that notice in a bulletin until we're closer to that time. Because I don't want to put it now and then people forget about it, you know. So beginning in section 7, Teresa discusses the danger to those with a weak constitution who may deceive themselves by how they react, including tears. And she talks about a weak constitution and mental problems a lot, but it's mostly people who really don't have much of a strong prayer life and are kind of self-focused in a lot of cases, you know, weak constitutions. So. Mm. And when I read that, I couldn't help but thinking of some of the televangelists you see who wink these big crocodile tears, you know, and then beg for money and stuff, and it was just... I thought that was kind of funny to see her talking about that before televisions were even invented and everything, you know. But they're crying and crying as they're passing the collection plate, you know.
Living in luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And in section 8, she speaks of this interior fire of the love for God. Mm-hmm. And to her, that's a really important thing because it kind of drives everything else you do, you know, this deep love of God that kind of is burning in your soul.
Which reminds me, I was, you know, they have a new priest at Holy Trinity, the healing priest, Father
Stephen,
the one whose father started that pro-life house.
Okay,
Stefan.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he has a book, and he was talking about when he was baptized in the Spirit. And I always kind of wonder, what is the difference between being baptized in the Spirit and having these kind of experiences, or are they just the same?
They're a lot the same. Somebody was telling me one day, I went to this healing mass up in Maryland, and as part of these whole ceremony, the priest that was doing it, after the mass is over, he'll invite people to come up and he'll bless them. And a lot of people just kind of pass out, you know, they just flake out. And it's being slain in the Spirit, so
right,
baptism of the
right,
Spirit
right.
kind of a thing. A lot of people fake it because they don't want to think other people had got it, but I didn't get it, you know. So this friend of mine and I used to go up there, and we used to stand behind the people as catchers because we don't want to get hurt when they went over, you know. But you could almost always tell when somebody's faking it because they kind of control their fall, whereas somebody who's really got it, they just go boom, they just go
they do.
Fly
it's
back.
It's real fun to watch.
Yeah.
But he describes it as the Holy Spirit just going through his whole body, giving him the gifts, and it kind of like actualizing the baptism.
Right.
And you have this feeling of love and joy after it. It just seems so similar.
Yeah.
Well, let me.
It probably is. It probably very much like that.
Later in life?
He was still real young. But he was the priest at Fairfax Hospital for the last 8 years, and now he's here. Holy Trinity.
What's the experience like if someone tells you something, a deeply moving, you know, religious or something, and you get this feeling in your body? Like, I get that, like pins and needles. Someone will say something, and all of a sudden, if it's like, it's real,
gives you the chills,
your whole body.
It just reacts, you just react to it.
I think it's emotional.
Yes.
Okay. But I don't know.
You
just react to it.
Yeah.
What it means is really getting to you. It's not just something you,
It speaks to your heart,
It really gets you. And a lot of times you don't forget those.
Right.
Because it kind of sticks with you.
Right.
You know, and when that happens, you ought to think about it more. You know, because obviously God is trying to get you to react to whatever you heard or read.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like a Lectio Divina, you know.
Yeah.
You're reading the scriptures and all of a sudden something kind of jumps out at you and really grabs you.
Yeah.
Well, you stay on that for a while. You don't just pass.
Yeah.
You think, well, what about this passage? You know, why is it grabbing me today when it didn't grab me, you know, last year when I read it? That kind of thing.
Yeah. It's sort of Father Blanc came. And then he did the healing mass, and I was, you know, everybody was there. And I went up, and he said something to me. He said, "Jesus wants me to tell you." I'm like, And then, you know, after he said all that, I sat in the pew, and I just was so out of it. Like, my body's like, what?
Right. Yeah.
And then I went home, and I slept like the whole day.
Interesting.
I just, like, passed out.
Wow.
That happens sometimes. When I was at one of Mary Ellen Lucas's talks one night, when she began her talk, she sounded different. I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, but her voice just sounded different. And you could tell it was Jesus talking through her.
Wow.
Because she had a talk planned, but then all of a sudden, she was talking to individual people in the congregation, not by name, but she was saying, "Go to the doctor. Don't be afraid. You don't have cancer. You know, don't worry about this. Don't worry about that." You know, he was talking to individual people that had this issue that they were all concerned about. And she went through a whole bunch of them. And then all of a sudden she was back to herself and she gave the talk she was planning to give.
Amazing?
You know, it's amazing.
What do you think about Anne the Apostle?
Oh, I had her book so
I don't know anything about her.
Okay, so she's been around for quite a while. I never knew about her either.
No.
Breege McKenna liked her, and one priest you know real well, I can't remember.
I think it's
anything.
A fine line they go.
So,
I've heard her name, but I don't really know anything about her.
She's in the British Isles. Do you know her? And so she apparently gave some prophecy recently. So I looked it up on the internet, and there's one selection that says there's scandal connected with it now. So if you would just look up Anne the Apostle, tell us what you think.
Okay.
Thanks. Well, you know, you said that one lady, wait, I want to write that, Anne of the Apostle.
Anne the Apostle. Or Anne the Lay Apostle, something
I think
like
it's
that.
Lay. There is a book.
Okay, yeah, she has several books.
Oh. Yeah.
But you talked about the one lady in Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
I had looked her up, and I think she went off on the wrong track later because mm-hmm. she has a book on Amazon, and her whole thing is kind of different, if it's the right woman. And her whole thing is, the book is about Jesus being in love with Mary.
Oh, Magdalene, oh, yeah.
And that's her whole thing. Oh.
She would never say that.
No.
So
no.
That's somebody else.
I hope so. Oh,
yeah, that's somebody else.
Yeah. There are others that talk about that. Mm-hmm. Around Easter time every year, they have a whole bunch on TV.
And she was from Pennsylvania, and her name was Lucas, and you said the first name.
Oh,
and it was
really?
The full name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
but I don't know. I couldn't find out if it was the same person.
I don't think it's the same person.
Ooh.
Not from what I knew about her.
What's Lucas' first name?
Mary Ellen.
Okay.
I'll see if I can find it again. It was I was like, what? I'll send it to you. Because then I kind of think, how could you have all this and then just go off on this other tangent that you know?
Yeah, I think it's somebody else.
And now you know about Michael Fiorst, right?
Mm-mm.
What's he? He's the one that's with the most popular. Well, I'm not going to waste your time. I don't know.
I read all of those, but you got to.
He's real popular.
It's kind of.
But he just. It was discovered he had some personal issues, so he's dropped out as head of it. But since I moved here, everybody's talked about his website.
What is it called?
I don't know, but his name is Michael Fiorst. If you just put that in, you'll get it.
Is that the guy that was militant Catholic that just
might be
that resigned?
Yes, that's
by Michael Voris.
Yeah.
How do you say it?
Voris.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't go on that website,
right?
Yeah, he's the guy that just left. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much doom and gloom on that.
I'm gonna turn this off for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's talk about Teresa.
Yeah. Let's
get back on track here.
You know, Father.
So in section 8, she speaks of this interior fire of love for God. She says, you will indeed know when this fire is the source of the tears. And she's talking about somebody who has this emotional reaction and they start crying. Ignatius Loyola used to do that when he said Mass a lot. If you read his biography, he's talking about saying Mass. He says copious tears and everything. So you'll know when this fire of love for God is the source of the tears. For they are then more comforting and bring peace, not turbulence, and seldom cause harm. So a lot of what she says about all these different experiences, you look at what she says about the effect. Because she says, when Jesus does anything, it has an effect. And the effect of anything the devil does is always bringing you discomfort, you know, anxiety, and all these kind of things. But when it's from Jesus, it always brings peace and comfort and those kinds of things. And so you always, when you have an experience like that, you always look at what is the effect of it? How do I feel as a result of this? And if you feel the right way, then it's a good indication that it might be from God. If you feel all this anxiety and everything else, you have to worry about it possibly being from the devil. So if they're from God, they are more comforting and bring peace, not turbulence, and seldom cause harm. Teresa says seldom cause harm. Under what conditions do you think this fire of love for God, when genuine, and its manifestations could cause harm?
But what do you mean by harm?
Well, that's the question. Mm. You know, what is she talking about here?
Mm.
The way I read it, when she's comparing it to the others, you would maybe not have the kind of peace that you normally would have with God, but maybe it's because you're not where you should be, and he's trying to get you to change and go through a conversion, which for some people is very traumatic.
Mm.
You know, you think of somebody who's not Catholic, and if they start having some of these experiences, God's calling them to himself, and they realize that what they have isn't what's giving it to them, they would go through a lot of anxiety. You know, what do I do now? Where do I go? You know, that kind of thing. And eventually they would figure out where he's calling them to. But for a time, they wouldn't. And so they might have that kind of anxiety, but it's really coming from God. but that's probably not going to be the most common thing. Mm.
I was talking to a woman yesterday who used to be a deacon in the Episcopal Church, and she was giving a homily, and she had this happen to her, and she was so embarrassed because she didn't mean to do that. It looks dramatic and hysterical, and she still doesn't understand why that happened. So,
so she's giving a homily, and
she just started sobbing, and I wondered if maybe it wasn't just the fire of love for what she was preaching.
It could be.
She's very, you know, sincere.
Yeah.
Right.
Go back and tell her where it's really coming from and then and call her over.
Yeah. And if it's phony, maybe I was just thinking people would like that. They just fake the tears and then they get in that mode and they might think, oh, I'm so religious, the tears are flowing. And
when it's genuine, you can kind of sense sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I went to a talk given by a priest in Woodbridge several years ago, and really holy priest. And he was talking about how much God loves us. And he said, I'm struggling here because I can't find the right words to tell you how much God loves you, to really make it home for you, you know? Mm. And he started trying to figure out, and he started crying.
Yeah.
And people were noticing that he was sobbing, you know? And he said, I just feel so inadequate because I know how much God loves us, and I'm trying to convey that to you, and I can't.
Yeah.
And he said, you need to know this.
Yeah.
And I feel so inadequate because you need to know what I know.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him afterward, and he said, he said, I just don't know how to tell people.
Yeah.
I can't find the right words to express what I know about how much God loves us, you know?
Yeah.
And he was just wonderful old priest.
And maybe just being overcome by the love that
yeah,
God
yeah. That's right, yeah.
Right. And I always thought, too, like years ago, that the difference sometimes, like, you know, the regular Christian and the saints, they had a great knowledge of, they didn't know exactly, but they knew to a degree how much God loved them.
Yeah.
And they wanted to respond to that love.
Right.
So the more you love him, the more you're going to respond.
Yeah.
And trying. I always thought that. That's the difference. They know to a degree the love of God.
And the thing we have to keep in mind all the time, too, is that love never just stays static. The more you love, the more capacity for love you have. It's the one thing that you can give away, and the more you give it, the more you receive. And so as you love others, your capacity for love increases. As you love God more, your capacity for love increases. And that's one of the beauties of it, because when you think about it, hate operates just the opposite of that, right?
Mm.
Okay, because hate feeds on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you do something to me that makes me really mad, so I hate you, so I go back at you, and then you go back at me. Mm-hmm. So it goes back and forth, and we keep trying to increase it. And so this feeding on itself. But if all of a sudden one of us says, I'm not going to keep doing this anymore. I'm going to love you anyway, because Jesus says, love your enemies. All of a sudden, it's like putting a bucket of water on a fire, and the love takes over, and all of a sudden that hate begins to go away. It has to feed on itself. But love doesn't. Love starts from the lover and goes out to the one loved, regardless of what the relationship is, child, friend, spouse, God, anything, you know. The more you love, the more your capacity for love increases.
Yeah.
And so you can love more and more and more by just loving.
Yeah.
Because God does that within you. And it's just an amazing process. And that's why love is the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah.
Because you can't kill it.
Yeah.
You know?
But we're working on it now.
People try. People try to work on it.
Yeah.
But you see, it's good. It just keeps hanging in there, you know.
Yeah. I have a friend who is a lifelong friend from Long Island. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just, you know.
Commenting.
She and the sister, for many, many reasons, do not get along. And it's reached a breaking point. And she feels like the victim. But when the phone conversation, I try and change it. And she feeds on what the sister says and repeats it and repeats it. And every phone call,
she's doing exactly what we talked about.
It's the same. And she's in very bad health to begin with. She's the one with the can't bend the leg after the operation.
Yeah.
Extreme pain, leg is swollen, red, black. It's a mess. But it's the same thing. And she's like, you have to stop that.
She needs
and so
healing.
You don't have to love her, but just pray for her. And yeah. God will do something to you. But it's in her. It's fanatical. I feel so sad for her because she's miserable. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, she can't love God if she doesn't love her sister.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Do you want to love God? And if she says yes, say, well, then you have to learn how to love your sister.
Yeah, and the priests tell her that, and she does go to Mass, and she has a good heart. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's like she's obsessed.
I think a lot of people are stuck in that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a sister.
Yeah.
Or I had a sister. Mm-hmm. But I suddenly realized that she would call me up and rant at me.
Yeah.
And I would go to church and I would say, God, please give me a kind, loving, and merciful heart.
Yeah.
And she would sit across the church and I would look right after. But I finally realized I had to stop talking to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because there are people like that.
Yes, yes.
You know, and she was...
Yeah. Yeah.
So you just pray for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because it feeds. I told her, I said, don't pick up the phone. Just it feeds. The more she hears, the more.
It needs a healing, just like anything.
It's a healing.
Sure.
It needs a healing. It's
that's
safe.
Right.
And there are people who put you down to make themselves feel better.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people do that.
I mean, and my girls and I, we're always, I guess, can't understand how there are people who do things to get back at people.
I think they get a habit, don't you think?
Huh?
They get in that habit from whatever reason.
Well, it's the old do unto others, you know, but then an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Jesus said, don't do that.
Well, I mean, what is the point?
Well, it's no point.
There's no point.
I don't think they're even thinking. They just do it.
But it has to be within you to do it.
Does it make them feel good? Because Dr. Phil, I used to watch him, now I don't, but he said, you know, if you're doing something constantly, you're getting something out of it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, what he would say.
He used to say that.
There's a payback.
There's a payback.
So in 669-1, Teresa says we should set our hands to the task of hard work and virtue. So once again, she's talking about virtue. She keeps talking about that all through this book. These are what we must pay attention to. Let the tears come when God sends them and without any effort on our part to induce them. I consider it better for us to place ourselves in the presence of the Lord and look at his mercy and grandeur and at our lowliness and let him give us what he wants, whether water or dryness. He knows best what is suitable for us. With such an attitude, we shall go about refreshed, and the devil will not have so much chance to play tricks on us. So Teresa's once again telling us to let God be in control, be responsive to his will. Two things are important: doing our proper work and growing in virtue. For most of us, that is plenty enough to work on. How do we decide what is our proper work?
What shows up in front of us.
That's right.
And I thought, too, like, we're created to know, love, and serve God.
Right.
That's like the first, and then our vocation in life, what's in front of us,
what
we have to do.
Our proper work is driven by our vocation. You're
and
right.
It's funny sometimes, right?
Like,
you know, you have to do and the love of God.
That's right. You know, whatever your vocation is, that's your proper work. Because that's the work God called you to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at our age, it's just to pray for those kids, all those naughty kids
that
we owned, all those kids we owned.
You know, the kids that I pray for are those kids in D.C. that are shooting people and seem to have no hope of a future life.
Right.
I mean,
But there's a group of black men I saw on TV that they are banding together and starting community groups. They said this has got to stop.
And they're really
reaching out.
That was amazing.
So maybe it's a beginning.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing.
Yeah.
They don't have fathers.
Right.
Yeah.
You go back to the elephants. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And you have, and I saw that. There are plenty of good, strong black men that need to get involved.
Yeah, they need to be surrogate fathers for these kids.
Yeah.
And they have nothing to do. You know, maybe some of them probably drop out of school and, you know.
They had a thing on TV about the how many kids are absent from the D.C. schools?
Right.
And then they
yeah.
Did you see that? And then they showed the Jesuit school in D.C.? Zero absence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they all have a future.
I didn't see the Jesuit part.
Jesuit's in the name of the school, but I don't know.
But they're teaching.
How? Yeah. I don't know how if it's connected to the Jesuits.
Yeah, it's Gonzaga.
It is Gonzaga.
But they didn't say Gonzaga.
That's what it is. It's Gonzaga. Huh. It's the Jesuit school there.
Huh. Yeah, my brother went to St. John's in D.C.
That's Jesuit, too.
So, well, no, it was the when he went, it was the Christian Brothers.
Christian Brothers.
Yeah, but those boys, they would go out at lunchtime and they would bring in homeless people and sit them in the front row. And to get the teachers upset.
Oh. That's funny.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, they were.
Well, because it's a Catholic school doesn't mean that the kids are really behaving well, you know.
But I mean,
I went to Jesuit High School in New Orleans, and we had a teacher that was. He was a seminarian. He was studying to be a Jesuit. I don't think he made it, thanks to my class. But he was a graduate of West Point.
Oh,
and so he walked like very militarily, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And nice guy, but he expected the class to have discipline, you know. And we didn't have any discipline. And so one day, before class, we turned all the chairs around to face the back of the room. So he walked in, saw that. He went down to get the principal. We turned all the chairs around back. We were holy little boys, you know. One day around Easter time, somebody brought a whole box of baby chickens in and turned them loose in the classroom.
Oh, my gosh.
We were terrible, you know. But it was always for this guy because we just tried to get his goat because he never did know how to hold discipline. The other teachers, man, they would come down on you like a ton of bricks, you know.
Yeah.
One of our teachers was a Latin teacher, and he was the wrestling coach.
Whoa.
And he told one of my classmates, if you come in class tomorrow without shaving, I'm going to dry shave you.
Oh.
And the kid called his bluff, and he did. He brought a razor in, and he dry shaved that kid right in the classroom.
You couldn't get away with that today.
You couldn't get away with that today. But, I mean, they had no problem with corporal punishment at that school.
No, you'd have to bend over and get hit with a golf club if you left your locker open in the Jesuit school in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We had a Latin teacher, Mother Eleanor. She looked like a marble statue, but she always had the rosary in her hand. She was always praying. We were petrified of Mother Eleanor. I mean, nobody moved. She was like 6 feet, big, strong, but the face was marble.
Yeah.
Oh, I can still see her.
Well, their motto was never smile till Christmas.
Yeah, we had a nun that used to play ball with us at lunchtime. She was amazing.
Oh, that's nice.
Daughter of charity. She had the big sailboat, you know.
Yeah.
She'd pin her skirt up and go out and play basketball with us at noon. And, the kids loved her. And she was responsible for getting all of us to be altar boys and get a bunch of us into the seminary and everything, you know.
Yeah.
She was really great.
Okay,
Teresa then tells us about a strange prayer. She says, in the midst of the experiences that are both painful and delightful together, our Lord sometimes gives the soul feelings of jubilation and a strange prayer it does not understand. It is, in my opinion, a deep union of the faculties. But our Lord nonetheless leaves them the faculties free that they might enjoy this joy. And the same goes for the senses without understanding what it is they are enjoying or how they are enjoying it. So something's happened, but you don't really understand what's going on, but it just feels good.
Mm.
What I'm saying seems like gibberish, but certainly the experience takes place in this way, for the joy is so excessive that the soul wouldn't want to enjoy it alone. It wants to tell everyone about it so that they might help the soul praise God. Teresa then says the devil cannot give this experience because there is so much interior joy at the very intimate part of the soul, and so much peace, and all the happiness stirs the soul to the praises of God. So why would God do that kind of thing, you think? Give you that kind of an experience?
To make you aware of his love for you?
Yeah. And to also, I think, to also get you to tell other people.
But you could only tell nuns, because if you told anybody else that today, they would tell you're having some kind of psychological...
Well, it depends on your friends. I've got a couple I can tell.
I think it depends on your friends, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There are some people who would say, oh, yeah, that sounds neat, you know? Yeah. I'd like to experience that.
Yeah.
And so they'll stop paying more attention to God.
Or I'll have some people call me and they'll say, I could only tell this to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we know we could tell you.
Yeah. So cute. So cute.
So Teresa then begins section 11 with, to be silent and conceal this great impulse of happiness when experiencing it is no small pain. She then mentions others who must have experienced this. So she says, when you have this experience, to be silent and conceal it is just a painful thing. You want to go tell everybody about it, you know? And of course, in her convent, she could. Mm. She could tell the other nuns. Mm-hmm. If we're out in the world, you got to be kind of picky about who you would tell something like this to, you know?
Or anything that's religious.
Yeah, because they might think you're crazy or something.
They would.
But it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah.
So in 12, Teresa tells her sisters to spend much time praising God. She's got a whole section there that talks about spending a lot of time praising God. In 13, she begins, may it please His Majesty to give us this prayer often, since it is so safe and beneficial. To acquire it is impossible because it is something very supernatural, and it may last a whole day. So it goes about like a person who has drunk a great deal, but not so much as to be drawn out of his senses. So you go around this euphoria, and you're so happy all day. That must be a great way to pass the day, you know, and you're so ecstatically happy all day long and just...
And you'd have no fear.
You'd have no fear about anything, and you tell everybody you know hello and everything, you know. That must be great. When I was reading that, it reminds me of that movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
After he goes through his redemption and everything, and he's running through town screaming at everybody, telling him hello and everything, you know, Merry Christmas and all that kind of stuff. That must be the kind of thing.
Yeah, that's, you know, as close talking. As the movies get to this.
Yeah,
I
think. Well, I
gotta tell you something. This is not, it's sort of apples and oranges, but it's in the same, you could not this, but I was out at Carol's, I told you, and she has the joint problem where the bones come out of the socket.
Yeah.
She never talks about what she has. She said the shoulder's bad.
That's painful.
That doesn't come out. But she said the ribs come out. Well, anyway, it was Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and she bent over. The head went down to the knees, and she moaned. It was so bad. I couldn't look at suffering like that. I closed my eyes, and I went like this. And instinct, you know, when we got the faith, it's instinct. I pulled out. I got 3 medals around my neck. And I said, here's the miraculous medal. And she said, put it on my rib. It was unbearable. And I said to the Blessed Mother, in an instant, a thought.
Right.
I said, let's see how miraculous that medal is.
But her bones were pulling away.
Did it work?
They were out. They were out.
She could see it.
Yeah. Did it work?
Yeah. 3-4 seconds later, she stands up and she said, Mom, and she's not dramatic. Carol was a math teacher. She says, Mom, she said, the rib is back in place, and I didn't touch it. And she said, every muscle in my body from head to toe relaxed at once.
But you said you could kind of see that happening.
Well, the shirt was on, you know. I mean, I don't want to read into it. But, and she said, a feeling of warmth came into my whole body.
Which is what healing people always
that's
say.
What I, that's right. That's what was the clue. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't, you know, I don't want to downplay or anything. And someone said to me, she completely healed. I said, the rib went back. That's enough, you know. But the bad problem is the tailbone is there's 3 bones.
That's
2 of them
painful.
Are out of whack. She moans.
That's very painful.
And I saw it. You know, you hate to see your kids suffer. She was going to drive me home. She couldn't. The husband said, I'll drive you. And she said, I'll come. So we're 20 minutes from Midlothian, and she's off the front cushion in the seat. And she's like this, trying to bend over to get off it. She couldn't. She was moaning. So we drove her right home. But she said, if I stand up, it's not as painful. And the heating pad helps it.
Is that Ehlers-Danlos?
It's a symptom. It's Ehlers-Danlos.
Danlos, yeah.
It's because the daughter has it.
They, at Walgreens, they have these big, thick cushions.
She got it.
With a hole in the middle that is made for that problem.
Oh.
So it takes the pressure off that tailbone.
Yeah. She told me the doctor gave her a prescription to get a pillow or something, so I presume it's that one.
And there's a lot in the catalogs right now, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
but
the
it works,
store,
it works pretty well because it's about that thick, so it raises you up.
I got to ask.
And then your tailbone goes into that opening, you know.
Yeah.
Takes that pressure off.
Yeah, that, I hope that's the one she got. He wouldn't give her one that's all filled in.
Yeah.
But the miracle is the husband wanted to drive to Minnesota for 2 weeks to go to the wedding that I have to go to on Thursday. Pray I don't like planes. But... he changed his mind, and of course, thank God she's not going. And she wanted to go, and I said, no, you can't go.
No, you can't go.
So thank God that was, but that was the feeling of joy. I'm like, that was like, it wasn't the same thing, but it was like a joy beyond a joy, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's such a great witness for the miraculous medal.
Oh, I told so many people, and I didn't go around. It was just that I was talking, and I said, you got. Father Smith kissed the medal, and he says, when I'm sick, I said, I'll bring it to you. We were kidding.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's why they call it the miraculous medal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing. A lot of things have happened because of it, you know?
Yeah. I knew it was a medal to me, and I love Mary. But I said, let's see how miraculous it's like. Show me.
I didn't know that.
That was exactly the feeling.
You know, there was that serial killer in Florida that stabbed those women.
Yeah.
And he said there was one... He couldn't get the knife to go down, and she was wearing a...
Really?
Is that right?
Really?
Yeah.
Here's a story about Ted Bundy. Something about...
Maybe that was
who
it
was. No, she was doing her rosary in her bed and, like, fell asleep holding it, and he walked past her room.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well,
Yeah.
God does a lot of funny things like that.
But, yeah.
God does amazing things for his people.
Oh, cool.
So we talked about how you would describe this strange prayer. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Chapter 7.
Where is the class? It was at Calvary, right on page 274.
In this chapter, Teresa speaks of the suffering of soul in this state.
Oh, wait, no.
As they are more aware of their sins and how much sin offends God.
Number 10.
She keeps going back to the same topic about being aware of how little we are and how much we owe God for what he's done for us and how much sin offends God.
Yeah.
Padre Pio talked about the same thing. You know, he said he was always afraid because of his human nature that he'd be weak enough to do something to offend God. And she brings this idea up again. We'll see it again in the seventh dwelling place where she's afraid that she's afraid that her nuns will... She and her nuns would do something wrong that they aren't even aware of, which is kind of interesting.
Well, if you're not aware of it's wrong,
that's
then
the
how
question
can
we're
it...
going to talk about when we get there.
Yeah.
Ignorance of the law is still breaking the law.
Yeah.
If you're culpable.
Yeah. There are some things in the law which are crimes of intent, where you have to be intentional. There are other things that are just crimes regardless of intent, like murder.
Yeah.
You know, even if you can't prove intent, you can still prove that you killed somebody.
Well, my brother, who's a lawyer, he said, everybody breaks a law, many, every day. They just don't know it.
Right.
Hmm.
So if you leave your house, you break a law.
Yeah.
Yeah. We drive it down a road. If you go one mile over the speed limit, you're breaking the law, you know?
It's like the Bible says the just man sins seven times a day. How does that...
Something like that, yeah.
It's true.
So this chapter, she also speaks about the need to always keep the humanity of Jesus Christ present in our mind, and in particular, his passion and his life, his mother, and the communion of saints. So she's always, she keeps bringing back, going back to the humanity of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big theme all through a lot of these chapters where, you know, we tend to think of God as risen and glorious and
all powerful
and everything, which is, you got to keep thinking of the humanity because that's why we're saved, because he came and took on our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So that we could take on his divinity.
Mm.
And if you forget about the humanity of Christ, you miss the whole point of his coming. You know? Mm. So she's really big on keeping that humanity of Christ in mind, because that's where we see firsthand what he did for us and why we're able to be in the state of grace that we're in.
Because how could you love him if you just thought of a God, you know, and you didn't think of what he did for us? Would you really be appreciative?
It'd be hard to love.
Yeah, it'd be hard
it
to
would,
love.
Yeah, right. So in the beginning she says, suffering over one's sins increases the more one receives from our God. Until we are there where nothing can cause pain, this suffering will not be taken away. So we're going to have that until we get to heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, the suffering because of a broken nature, you know, and the things we do to offend God. The soul doesn't think about the suffering it will undergo on account of its sins, but of how ungrateful it has been to one to whom it owes so much and who deserves so much to be served. So your focus shifts from yourself to God, and you're focusing on everything he did for us and how much we owe him because of that. And you forget about yourself. For in these grandeurs, God communicates to it, the soul understands much more about him. It thinks its foolishness was so excessive that it never finishes grieving over that foolishness when it recalls that for such base things it abandons so great a majesty. So she's talking about the base things, that little everyday desires, you know, that we have in the world that take us away from God. You just think about you watch television every day. You think of all the things people are so attracted to and spend so much time on that have nothing to do with God. Have absolutely nothing to do with him. Look at how much time and effort people and money people put into pro football. I mean, they plaster their houses with jerseys and everything else. They're never going to play pro football. Why would they buy the jersey?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They buy a jersey because somebody has happened to be good at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so they spend thousands of dollars on this stuff, you know? And their minds are always there.
Yeah.
When they wake up on Sunday morning, all they think about is what time is the game start.
Yeah.
But their wives are gossiping, so maybe it keeps them from gossiping.
I don't know.
There was a show on Sunday. Once in a while, I'll put it on, but just to break up. So anyway, it was luxury vacation homes at a lake. And I go, oh, does this look good? So anyway, $6 million homes, $7 million homes. And they walk in, they weren't happy with them. They got to redo this kitchen. I said, yeah, we had a house up in the Adirondacks 40 years. That would fell from heaven. And I said, it's the same lake, same sky. It wasn't $7 million.
It's an idol-like.
It was sick. Yeah. It was honestly sick. Young people.
Yeah.
$7 million.
Oh, I think it's that's a small amount.
That's right.
Yeah, that my son's an architect, and he says they move in, they build this house, and they're finished, and then they move on.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's that nothing makes them happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's with, like, cosmetic surgery. And all the trends and all that we see online. And we look at it and we go, why would you want to have fat put into your behind? Why would you?
The Brazilian butt.
I just think the chances you're going under. Who wants to do surgery? You know, when you go to the doctor for an issue, that's like your last resort. When you start to say, okay, I'll do the surgery.
Idol is their appearance.
Yeah. And you think they're jumping into it to do it for something you don't.
Yeah. What's really sad is when you look at some of the photographs of some of these Hollywood stars that got a lot of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then as they aged, it began to sag and stuff. And they look horrible.
Weird.
You know, and you can't undo a lot of that stuff.
But you know, they're caught in that trap, though.
Yeah.
You know, because we see them young on the film. You're like, you look at some film that we see all the time every Christmas.
Yeah.
It's been 40 years. I mean, come on.
They get younger looking as they get older.
Yeah.
So they kind of are trapped in that. And I mean, I think it probably takes a strong person in that kind of lifestyle to step away and say, no, I'm not going to do all that stuff. You know, there are some.
A few.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of the soul's responses to these gifts of God, she says, as for the fear of hell, such persons don't have any. All their fear is that God might allow them out of his hand to offend them and to find themselves in as miserable a state as they were once before. If they don't want to stay long in purgatory, the reason comes from the fact of their not wanting to be away from God, as are those who are in purgatory, rather than from the sufferings undergone there.
Mm.
That was an interesting perspective, because they're not concerned about the suffering. They're just concerned about being away from God.
Mm.
They want to be in his hands all the time.
Which they say is the main pain of purgatory.
Right, exactly, separation from God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're not even concerned about going to hell.
Mm.
They just don't want to go to purgatory. They want to be with God all the time.
Mm.
And that's really kind of a good place to be, you know? Just be in his hands. See these pictures sometimes of God's hands and you're holding you. You kind of think of that's where I want to be, you know?
Wouldn't it be, I'm just thinking this could be right or wrong, wouldn't it be better in this life to have that desire that you want to live with God than to wait until you get to purgatory? Because isn't that to a degree a little object of purgatory, like to make you want to, because you see God and then you have to leave him.
Yeah.
So that's like, but you can also have that here.
Well, you hear people all the time saying, I can make it to purgatory. I don't want to go to purgatory. I want to go to heaven.
Like
now, I might miss that. I might end up in purgatory, you know, for a time. But heaven should be your shooting, your goal, not purgatory. Because if you miss purgatory, you end up in hell. You know, you don't always hit your goal. And so if your goal is purgatory.
What do they say? Every unloving word that we've said, you have to have purified in purgatory. So we have purgatory for the Democrats and the Republicans, because they say a lot of unloving things. They're going to be purified.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can remember years and years ago, and when you get thoughts that this book brings it back to me, like I always just say to God, I want to spend my purgatory on earth. I don't know where that came from, you know.
Well, that's a good thing to do.
And it's more known.
You know, like the aches and pains and all the stuff in the crosses.
Yeah.
You know? Because I say you have a choice here. You don't there.
You don't.
So it has more benefit here.
That's right.
You know?
Because I was worried about people that shoot for purgatory, though, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you miss it, I mean, it's you go to hell.
Yeah, but I just think, how can you not go to purgatory when you say unloving things?
Right.
Do the 12 years prayers of St. Bridget.
Right. Oh, okay.
Well, charity covers a multitude of sin.
Yes. St. Peter says love covers a multitude of sins.
Mm-hmm. And Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
Was forgiven much because she loved
him. Right.
That's right.
Augustine. Don't you think people that are going to church, they're not thinking that they're going to hell anyways? I mean, you're thinking you don't want to, you know, someone that's going to daily mass, you know.
Someone like that,
You're thinking more of, I don't want to offend God. You're not thinking about.
But how many mafia people in New York are going to mass all the time? Having their babies baptized and everything else, and they go out and kill somebody, you know?
There was something on that. I can't remember. They interviewed somebody. I think it was about the book, though, so, like, the Godfather book, and they showed, like, the head Godfather's wife is going to Mass, and they're like, why are you going to Mass? Your husband's doing all this stuff, and she's like, I gotta pray for him.
So
I always think of that when I watch that.
I always think of that with the Kennedys.
Yeah.
She went to daily Mass, and her husband was such a womanizer.
I'm sure she saw a lot of things, and she was just giving
Walgreens Pharmacy.
Okay, you got to stop at the pharmacy.
I put it on airplane mode. Why was I getting a phone call? Okay. What Teresa seems to be saying here is that as God communicates himself to the soul during these raptures and other gifts, the soul receives an understanding of God and his infinite love for us, as well as through greater self-knowledge, how much the soul has previously offended God by its sins, and how utterly foolish that was. Her prior statements about doing what we can to repay God for having done so much for us comes to mind. We cannot unring a bell. All we can do is repent and pray for the grace never to offend God again, and pray for our love for God to grow each day. If you look at the prayer of St. Gemma of Galgani, she kind of encapsulates this in the prayer. She says, you know, I come before you as a sinner, please forgive. I said, I lay all my sins at your feet. Please forgive me for them, because the burden of this oppresses me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a beautiful prayer. Mm-hmm. And none of you have seen it or not. If you haven't, I'll send it to you if you want. Mm. But it's very pretty. Mm. So I incorporated that into my daily prayers. It's really nice. Yeah. But she's got this same idea.
Jim,
you know?
Could you please send it to us?
Yeah, I sure will.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful prayer. It isn't long. It's a kind of a short little prayer. Mm-hmm. But it's just that this sentiment is so expressed so well there. You know, it's just I've offended you so much in the past. Mm. Like you can't unring a bell, you know. Mm-hmm. But I lay these sins at your feet. Please forgive me of them all. For the burden of this oppresses me. Mm-hmm. You know, and then she goes on and stuff. And it's a beautiful little prayer.
And you're going to send it to us?
I will send it to you, yes. I will be happy to do that. And so can this growth in spirituality begin now, even if we have not yet reached the sixth dwelling place?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Your growth in spirituality can always begin wherever you happen to be. What things can we do to better appreciate God's love for us and move away from sin, away from offending Him?
Think about His passion, what He did for us.
Yeah. He do the two things that Teresa talked about here in this whole book. You know, self-knowledge. Yeah. You know,
humility.
Yeah.
Look at your life honestly. Yeah. And look at the good things you've done and the bad things you've done, and acknowledge the bad things, and then express contrition for those, and then look at what God did for you, and look and that which will give you humility, because you can't say I'm, you know, there's what was that country western song? Oh, God, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as me, or something like that. I forget how it goes, but it's a funny song. It's a comedy song, you know.
My boys used to sing it all the time.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly how the words go, but it's a kind of a funny song. But the more self-understanding you have, the better chance you have of growing in humility. Because you realize how far you are from God. And then you can start growing and trying to change your life and grow closer to God. You know, it's the thing you do.
Except for narcissistic people.
Yeah, it's very hard for them.
They can't do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They said it's almost impossible for psychiatrists to help them.
Yeah.
That it's a lifelong thing, that you have to want to do it, but have to have help.
Yeah, it's like vainglory. Like Father Padre Pio talks about that.
There's seven things, and if you just Google it, and you'll know somebody like that.
Padre Pio said that vainglory is the only vice for which there is no opposing virtue, because you think you're doing all this good stuff, but you don't realize that you're only doing it for yourself, not for God. And so he said, the only thing you can do for somebody who's got vainglory is pray for them.
And it's really a kind of insecurity, because they need constant reaffirmation. And they act like that.
Yeah.
It's ostentatious.
Yeah.
Is that a mental problem?
It for sure is.
Well, that's their cross that they have to bear then.
Yeah. So we're going to stop here. Okay. It is 10:32 rather. And so we will pick up on page 12 next time.
You know, Father Spitzer this week said he loves every book of St. Therese's, every single one. He just went on and on about her.
Yeah. I was listening to one of my son's homilies, and he was talking about St. Teresa of Avila, and he says, St. Teresa is, I call her a big T.
Oh, yeah.
And a little flower, I call her a little tea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mother Teresa, I call her a middle tea.
I'm really enjoying his homily.
Yeah, they're really good.
They were good sermons. I only listened to a few, but it's amazing.
They're really good. He's an amazing homilist. Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Jim.
We shall see.